After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Everyone, it's Raghu. I'm back with Ram Dass Here and Now, a new edition, and it's from a talk that Ram Dass gave in, just a couple of years before he had that stroke. And the part that we're presenting is a Q&A. We've been doing presenting some of these Q&As lately because they really address a number of different topics that we think would be of real interest to people, especially in these really anxiety-filled times that we are in right now here in mid-April 2022. But before I get into that, I just want to mention everybody, I think I announced it a couple of weeks ago, that we put together a wonderful retreat opportunity in Boone, North Carolina, at the Art of Living Retreat Center, right in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's just gorgeous. And first time we're doing something on the East Coast. Of course, Krishnadas will be there, kirtan every night and workshop during the day over these 4 days. And Sharon Salzberg will be zoomed in, unless things change and she can come in person. Bob Thurman will be there, our wonderful Buddhist friend. And this is about the intersection. I mean, one of the main theme is about the intersection of bhakti and Buddhism, and called Love and Reason. So Bob and Sharon, of course, both represent so powerfully that intersection with what Ram Dass has represented all these years, the bhakti part. And who else? East Forest is going to be there. Spring Washam, a wonderful teacher out of Jack Kornfield's Spirit Rock tradition. And Benji Wertheimer of Shantala with his wife Heather will be there as well. So we got lots of music stuff going on. And I'm going to be there, and I'll do something with Duncan Trussell, who'll be zoomed in, and more to be announced as we move along here. So just go to ramdass.org/summer retreat. No, mountain retreat. ramdass.org/mountain retreat. It's just gorgeous there. We're going to have walks in nature and with music, and it's called forest bathing. We're going to do forest bathing. I myself find walking in forest highly, highly effective way to just drop all of the BS that we have going on in our lives day to day, and the input of information and vibrations from around the world is pretty difficult. So forest bathing will be done there. But also we have we have selected and will select audio and video from Ram Dass's catalog to address, particularly, of course, the intersection of bhakti and Buddhism, because that's a very prominent part of Neem Karoli Baba's it's not his tradition, because there was no me, mine going on there, but certainly what we brought back, meaning Ram Dass and Krishnadas and all of us who came back from India from that point in time, really was a wonderful combination of love, bhakti, and we're calling it reason, but really discriminating wisdom that Buddhism really does represent. So we're going to have breakout groups and discussions around Ram Dass's talks that we'll present there, and the other speakers will be jumping off of those points of discussion. So look forward, again, ramdass.org/mountain retreat. This particular podcast, as I said, was a Q&A as part of a longer talk, and it's just got so many things that are relevant today. Being the first caller was talking about just having trouble just being alive and being angry at what's going on and angry at oneself, and Ram Dass responded to that. There's a lot of that going on with us all. Always has been, of course, but I don't think I'm overstating the reality of what we're faced with now, with the war that's going on in Eastern Europe, with the pandemic that's still with us, with the environment that is so very upsetting for all of us, with the polarization, particularly in this country, well, polarization worldwide, but in this country, it's getting very, very difficult. So, yeah, these questions and answers, I think, will help. They just absolutely help. He also talks about, there's questions about death. And Ram Dass spent a large part of his life relating with the reality of death and helping people. In particular, I don't know if any of you remember, but he wrote this. There was, I think one of the callers here asked Ram Dass about death regarding someone very young, which was his son who died at the age of 4. And he says, of course, it's one of the hardest kinds of suffering. And the caller did bring up Ram Dass's letter to Rachel. Anybody who's in any kind of situation like that, by the way, certainly write to us at info@ramdass.org or at Be Here Now Network. And we'll make sure to get somebody to send you that wonderful letter he wrote to Rachel's parents who had been murdered in Northern California. And what he wrote was just extraordinary, and we've shared it with many, many different people. So that's also part of the Q&A here. Just one thing that I have to mention that struck me, and it's to me the most important thing that we can do collectively. To be able to, of course, individually we need to change our insides, you know. We need to refine our insides so that we are not so self-centered. And then, as Ram Dass says, we can radiate who we are, and that is definitely a social action. And secondarily, say at the same time, really, it is about us getting together and being able to share with each other. And Ram Dass said, what I've experienced in the past 2 hours, just at this talk that he gave, with all of the back and forth with the various questions and concerns, he says, it's just the way in which our humanity is being shared. I have so appreciated the truth and sweetness and playfulness. We're just hanging out in our living room together as fellow human beings. We're hanging out together as fellow human beings, exploring the delight and the play and the mystery. And that is what's called satsang, or the Buddhists call sangha, or just plain old community. And the work that we do on ourselves that we can share with others, and the profound issues of the day that I just mention. I don't have to mention. Everybody well knows them. Being able to commiserate around these issues and hold ourselves with self-compassion, and then we're able to have some compassion for others. Just talking about this stuff and moving into a practice of commitment to lose the attachment to our self-concern, at least as much as it usually is on a day-to-day basis. And how better to do that if we share? Because in the sharing, we understand that we are all wanting the same thing. We want to be happy. We want others to be happy. And what Ram Dass said at the end, which he experienced obviously in this with this audience in this talk, was the wonder and the play and the mystery that we can have by just hanging out. Can be in our living room with half a dozen people, you know. It happens all the time. So this is Ram Dass Here and Now. And again, this talk goes back to, when was it, 1996. And it was in Los Angeles at KPFK, actually. And that's where he was doing, and with his intention of, it was going to happen right around the time he had his stroke, which was to do a radio show. So this is kind of a precursor to that. It's quite wonderful. This is Be Here Now Network. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com, and we have a phenomenal lineup of different teachers and thought leaders that you can listen to or watch on YouTube. We put all of it on YouTube as well. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Ram Dass Here and Now. See ya.
Welcome back to Here and Now with Ram Dass. The number is 818-985-5735. Peter, we're back together again.
Hi.
What can I do for you?
Well, I think the crux of anything I would have to say is I seem to have a real resentment for my life, is what it boils down to.
A resentment for your life?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I resent being alive. And it may sound like I'm currently depressed and suicidal, and as far as I know, I'm not in the middle of one of those, although I have been in the past.
What does the word resent mean to you? What does that mean?
Well, I at first was going to mention a lack of certainty and problems with self-esteem and hitting a wall when I turned 40 about realizing how unhappy I was with my life still. And when I was thinking, while I was waiting to speak to you, what was underneath it all, it's a lot of anger that...
What are you angry about?
Well, I guess it's the whole big drama that's set up when you're a child, or maybe even before then. I guess I'm angry at the people who raised me, or angry at the decision I made to reincarnated into this family. I now, at my age, with no living parents, I think most of it I've learned to turn in at myself. I'm always angry at myself for not achieving, angry at myself for not handling something correctly, angry at myself for not being able to make choices, so the choices go by before I made a decision. And the other side of this is the people in my life are people that come to me constantly as a very stable force who listen. And I try not to give advice, but who listen and pretty much hears what they're trying to say to me. And I feel so inadequate for that.
Well, I guess you should enjoy your feelings of inadequacy as long as you want to. I mean... the anger, I mean, you're victimization is part of that, is victimization, of feeling you've been victimized by somebody or something. And everybody and everything was just doing what they were doing, like trees and rivers. You and what happened to you is what happened to you, and here we are.
Right.
You can define yourself in terms of your past as if you need to. I find that one's personal history becomes less and less kind of relevant and interesting as time goes on. And what you have at this existential moment is a kind of an open space. You've got people seeing you differently than you see yourself. You've got feelings of some frustration with the way your life is at the moment. But that's all just the stuff of it. I mean, it's as if it's an adventure story, and you don't really know. And the adventure is partly, what am I doing? Whoops.
I'm breaking up here.
Oh, what's the story? What am I so...
Go ahead.
The question is where you can be in relation to your anger, and do you have to identify with it? You can hold it without identifying with it by saying, like, there's anger versus I'm angry. By finding the...
I have so much trouble. I mean, I dealt with so much of it, I thought, earlier in my adulthood.
Yeah.
And
it's a bottomless well. I mean, when you deal with psychological stuff, it never ends. It's like the garden of infinite delight.
I guess so.
You can always milk it. I saw that it was like Freud talking about analysis being unending, because there's always more of it. But what finally happens is your consciousness can move into another place where you finish being a victim, you finish being angry. There's still anger and there's still victimization. It's just you're not buying into it so much. And, I mean, who's talking to me now doesn't feel either victimized or angry.
Yeah.
You feel just like another being to me, and here we are hanging out together. Thank you, Peter, for calling.
Thank you.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Rundus. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm trying to make sense of how I'm feeling. My aunt died Christmas Day, and a little boy that I was a teacher of is 11 years old, and he died 2 days ago from leukemia. I've done an amazing amount of work with your stuff on Death is Not an Outrage, and I'm trying to prepare myself. I've got an elderly mom. And
Prepare yourself what?
For her to go at some point. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, consciously, I've got it all together, and I understand it. And then when people die, I don't do well with this.
What do you mean you don't do well? You have grief.
I get really sad.
Sure. Why in the hell shouldn't you? I mean, I get grieving and sad, too. I think grieving is a necessary and a healing part of life. I think that when you've had a reality in which another person has played a part and that person leaves, there's a rip in the fabric of your psychological existence, and there's a tremendous feeling of loss, and you're bereft, and the sadness, and all of that. And I think that's part of our humanity. I mean, I feel I celebrate that, even though it's painful as hell to me. I still celebrate it, and I really invite people to grieve, and I do a lot of work with people just saying, grieve some more, don't get done so soon, because this culture with its stiff upper lipness, you know, I think that's baloney. I mean, I would say go grieve some more. But what happens is when the grief runs its natural course, as I said in that Death is Not an Outrage tape, you come to the point where you realize that you've tasted something with that person that was such a living moment that that moment still exists independent of death. I mean, there's a moment when we recognize that love transcends death. And that has to happen experientially, and it has to happen when grief runs its natural course. And then you suddenly realize when the mind stops with the reminiscence and the kind of using the pain of the loss and the feeling of bereftness, you realize that the way you knew that person was also included a part of you that was not in time and space, and that continues to exist. I mean, my guru died in 73, and he is the most living presence in my life now, and yet he doesn't have a body.
But you don't grieve him anymore, right?
No, I don't grieve him anymore. No, because he's too so much with me. I mean, what am I grieving about? That old body left? I mean, that isn't... I can't go to India and meet him, but he seems so much in my life now that where would I go to get closer to him? And I think that's what happens with people you have really loved. I watch, like an old couple, one partner dies and the other feels absolutely bereft. And sometimes they can take that loneliness and anger and self-pity and sadness, and they can take it with them to their grave, and they just stay on that track. Other people go through it, and they start to come out the other side, and they start to begin to realize what the legacy is of their beloved is inside them. And they start to feel enriched by their relationship rather than bereft from it, which is, I think, a great gift from a lover to a beloved.
And another part of this is that I'm really close with this little boy's family, and what can I do as somebody who is a little bit more above the grieving situation because I'm not in his family? What can I do for this mother?
You can be with her in a clear, quiet, and present way. You can be there without questioning her responses, without judging her, without making them worse or exacerbating them, but just being present. You are one heart being present with another heart, and that's the gift. That's what you offer. Sometimes it's a glass of water and sometimes it's cooking a meal for somebody, but behind that is always just huge. It's heart-to-heart resuscitation, basically. Thanks, dear, for
Thank
calling.
Thank you for being on the air.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Clem, good evening.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Very nice to speak with you.
Thank you.
Echo what the first caller, I believe, said, and it is an honor. I have one of your books sitting right next to me, Journey of Awakening, and I mention it because it's had quite an impact on me, probably one of the books I've read that has the greatest impact on me in the last couple of years, and therein lies part of the problem.
Okay.
I come from, I suppose, a very common middle-class suburban background, and although I aspire to a career in the arts and writing, I have a problem, almost a dichotomy, in that mentally, reading, amongst other things, your book has led me to certain conclusions, but, you know, there, and I have to get up every morning, I have to work to pay the bills, I wait tables to make my ends meet, and I can't seem to align the nuts and bolts, the day-to-day, with the conclusions I'm reaching in my head. It's almost like everything has led me up to the starting line.
Let me just say, Clem, that I'm 65, and I am still in the process of integrating those things, integrating the deeper kinds of understanding that I have touched and that I know somewhere in my being, and bringing it into play in my daily life of waiting on tables or whatever the action is, or driving a car or answering a letter or whatever, paying my taxes or standing in line or something. Because each one is another kind of, it's like that's your curriculum at the moment. That's what you've been offered to bring to bear, that wisdom, to understand how to participate in the dance of life without being trapped in it, without pushing against it or grabbing it.
Well, I most certainly can see the poetry of the nuts and bolts. I most certainly experience it, whether it be as simple as nature and a lawn, you know, a fresh-cut lawn after
a morning
rain. Or a
dirty dish. How about a dirty dish?
Or a dirty dish. No,
good.
I can recognize the poetry of it, but there is a certain thing that I feel I can't put into action, you know, even as simple as meditation, although I can see mentally, I can grasp the wealth of it, and I can understand when meditation has happened spontaneously to me.
Like Trungpa Rinpoche's book called Meditation in Action, there's no reason why your life of even waiting on table isn't a meditative act.
Okay. okay, well, what? Why? You know, there seems. I mean, is it my perception that says there's this major dichotomy, that there's this gap, there's this chasm between
exactly
these very spiritual realizations I have and the lack of them in practice in my day to day? I'm desperately looking for a way to align those two worlds.
Well, don't be desperate. It won't help. Be patient.
Well, patience, yes, granted, I believe I have a wealth of it, but I also have, you know, a burning passion. And I
that will keep directing you, but don't get trapped being burning passion too much, because it'll start to destroy the happiness of this moment.
Oh, but then again, I can see the utter wealth and the beauty and the poetry within the passion. I mean, it's almost like I can see God in everything, and yet I don't know which path to take, and I'm sure I'm experiencing him all the time anyway.
I would say it doesn't matter which path you take. You're doing fine. I mean, I know it's hard to admit that, because you'd rather suffer some more, but I...
Well, I'd rather not.
Well, when you... we'd rather not than don't. Just enjoy the dissonance. I mean, dealing with the dissonance between what you're doing in daily life and how you get trapped in seeing it a certain way.
So that's the art of it.
The art and the poetry of the play, of the interplay, of getting uptight, of getting up and having to go to work and doing all that stuff.
Well, why, when I see, I mentally accept the validity of meditation, why can I not put it into practice?
It takes a long time to go from understanding something intellectually to being it. It's a process. It deepens very, very, very slowly, and you just got to develop a lot of patience.
Now, I know patience is very sound advice, but perhaps there's something you can offer me to.
I don't think there's any hope.
I'll let that one.
You're a comedian, aren't you?
That's the best I do for you. There's no hope, so give up.
Okay.
Now what? Now we've given up. Now what?
Okay, so I guess I base my life on irony, and I guess you confirm that my basis is correct.
I think you're doing beautifully. I think your consciousness is quite playful. So I would just say enjoy the humor of it all.
Oh, you know, it's a pleasure to speak with you, without a doubt.
A pleasure to speak to you, too.
I wish you the best. I hope to have the opportunity in the future.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night. Hi, Leanne. Good evening.
Hi. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
I have a question about material manifestation and renunciation. Speaking from what's happening for me, I opened up a yoga studio a couple of years ago, and I'm having a difficult time. I'm having a difficult time letting go and finding a place of creating affluence so I can keep it running, and letting go into not having anything. I'm getting stuck, and am I making sense?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. And I think that the whole issue of right livelihood and of being successful at something you want to do is a very real cause for concern in an individual. And the statement of doing one's dharma says that you find yourself called to have a yoga center, mm-hmm. center, and you do it as impeccably as you can, with as much love as you can and as much presence, but whether it works or not is not fully in your control.
Yeah.
It has to do with other people. It has to do with the cultural moment. It has to do with the economics of the society. It has to do with the psychological attitudes towards yoga. It has to do with a lot of things. It has to do with your childhood experiences. It's a multi-determined, caused situation. And you don't have control over all that.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have control over is doing the stuff you do as well as and cleanly and as beautifully and as compassionately as you can. And if it falls through, it falls through. And then there's another moment, and then there's something else.
And what you'll see is, what you're saying to God is, I will be happy to do your work if you will let me to do it this way, because this is the way I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you may or may not have that opportunity. I don't get to do all the things I want to do either. And the question is how gracefully you can listen to hear the next thing you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear it, and I just hear how hard it is in this culture to get free of fears about economics, because they're so real and dominant in this society.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a huge part of me that thinks it's really awful that I even charge money for something like that. It's like,
I've been through the same thing, but in this society, you have, I mean, I think that the contract between human beings is that we share our goods and services, and we get from that things that we need for our livelihood. And I've learned how to do that. After all, I was given everything I was given for nothing in India. But yet back here, there isn't the culture that supports people doing what I do, unless I charge for it. And I do charge, and I have to look and say, what is a fair way or amount? But I have finished with that thing about being guilty for charging for the spiritual work, because I don't feel that it's exploitive if it's an honest and open contract.
Right. Yeah, I do. I mean, I you know, we really create a good space there for people and a loving environment.
Well, thank you for doing that.
It's just, you know, it's just, I don't know, I just can't seem to get unhooked.
Get unhooked.
Yeah.
Then all I can suggest is you sit with your inability to get unhooked and watch it. Okay?
What else?
What else?
No, I mean, what else is there? There's nothing else.
There isn't anything. Yeah. You don't have any choice.
Right.
Hey, thanks, dear, for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Namaste.
Namaste. Chi-Chi, hello.
Peace and love. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, I was born in Nigeria, and I've spent most of my life in this country.
Right.
I was given a long name at birth, and I now prefer to be called Chi-Chi by those who cannot, you know, deal with my long name.
Can I hear your long name?
Well, my first name is Chimokenwa.
Chimokenwa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, middle name, Gemma, anyway. I used to be called Chinwe.
Yeah.
I've gone through some name changes over the years, but
I have too.
Okay, now you know prefer to be called Chinwe by those who can handle that, and those who can't can call me Chi-Chi.
Chinwe.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So I've gone through people, you know, over the years asking me, you know, what am I, where am I from, and whatever, and it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and being a very curious person myself.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself, when I'm among people, sometimes asking them,
sure,
you know, what are they or whatever, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
You
know? Not out of judgment, just curiosity.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so in reference to, I want to say something about my father. My father recently has passed away a few years ago, and I've had a few dreams about him, and I feel closer to him now that he's gone than I did when he was alive.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Okay. Reference to donation. I mean, reference to working. I'm self-employed, and sometimes I get into the thing about, you know, whether to charge people or not.
Yeah.
So sometimes I charge, and sometimes I just accept donations.
Yeah, right on.
I wanted, okay, so now getting to the question.
Okay. You're doing beautifully, by the way. You're wonderful. Chinwe, go ahead.
Okay. One quick question. What is your birth date? And then the other thing is, you mentioned dropping the body at some point.
Yeah.
And I'm briefly familiar with Tantra and Taoism.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Taoism, we can experience immortality if we want. And I also want to mention that, you know, my name that has the qi in it has a very similar meaning to qi in the Chinese language.
Got it.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, my birth date is April 6th, 1931. I was born around 9:40 in the morning, I believe.
19 what?
1931.
Okay.
I'm an Aries.
All right.
And then, let's see, what was the other part of your question?
Oh, the Tao and
Tantra. And the Tao and
Tantra.
About immortality.
Right.
I certainly think that there are ways of using energies in the universe to extend the duration of physical life. That whether or not one wants to do that is another question. Whether one hears it to be in the harmony of the way of things, the deeper I get into parts of my identity, the less I am attached to keeping this physical body eternally, because it just seems like a certain classroom or a level. And I really find that there are more interesting aspects of existence beyond that of incarnation in a physical body. So I want to honor it and take care of it while it's around, but I really don't feel that pull for longevity that immortality issues have to deal with. Thank you very much for calling, Chinwe.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Carl. Carl, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I was not pushing the right button.
Ah, hello there.
Hello there.
It's really, this is really cool to be able to just call you up.
Well, that's great.
I can't believe it. I had a son named Willie who died 2.5 years ago. He had neuroblastoma. Mm. And
how old was Willie?
He was 4 when he died. He was 2.5 when he was diagnosed.
Yeah.
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 How
are you doing with it?
Well, you know, I don't know if, how am I doing? It comes and goes. I come and go.
I bet it does.
You know, in Be Here Now, you talk about taking the crispy trip, you know?
Yeah.
I'm pretty crispy.
I bet you're crisp by this, very much so, yeah. I think this is one of the hardest kinds of suffering, the loss of a child, because it feels unnatural in the way of things that a child should die before a parent.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's a very
deep... it happened also, he got sick right in the middle as his mother and I were divorcing, which made it,
you know,
just that much more of a drama, actually.
But I suspect you and he connected in pretty deep love along the way.
I couldn't hear you. What?
I suspect you and he connected in pretty deep love along the way.
You know, we did. It was very weird. Because in a lot of ways, I didn't feel like I knew him very well. And I guess he knew me pretty well. Because he waited for me to get there before he died. And I actually asked him to do that if he could. I told him it was okay if he had to go before I could be there. But the way it happened was his mother called me and I raced over and I ran in the house and I said, Willie, I'm here. And he took one look at me and he died.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, yes.
I've never quite understood. I know that's some kind of a gift. I just don't, you know, I still don't know quite what.
Yeah.
I heard in one of your tapes, though, you said that you wrote a letter to some parents who'd lost a child.
Yes, I did.
And you said something about it's so unbearable it forces you out of your mind.
That's right.
Which is absolutely true.
I bet it is, and I bet you've experienced that too.
I did.
Yeah.
And I still experience it. I still go out of my mind every.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. His birthday is Friday. So the
right.
Yeah. So I'm close to that now. But you also went on to say there that you know how God feels. I think that's what you said.
Yep.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
They say in India that for a great saint, everybody is their child. And just imagine that for a moment, theoretically. And just imagine experiencing the world's people as your children and the numbers that are dying each day as children or even as adults, but they're all experienced as children. So that there is that kind of bearing the unbearable or being in the presence of the unbearableness. It's taking the excruciating pain of the loss of a child and just having it as a continuous presence all the time.
And yeah, well, that pretty much describes how it's been.
Well, that kind of being in such intimate relationship to the mystery, because actually, how could you know why that is? Why was your son taken away? Why did he come and stay briefly and leave? What is it? And there's no rational way your mind is going to deal with that. It's going to deal constantly with just being thrown into the mystery until because when I said, then you are able to see as God sees and love as God loves, the thing is that I'm talking about God as that kind of consciousness that embraces suffering into itself rather than pushes against it, that sees suffering as being part of the way of the manifestation of the universe. And it's in that sense of being, having this all internally in yourself, the vastness of the suffering.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by the way God sees it. And experiencing that as grace. Does it get through or not?
Yeah, I'm not sure. What I have experienced is a great deal more compassion.
Uh-huh.
For other people.
Right.
For their pain. A lot of people will say to me, you know, they'll say, I don't have any business telling you this because you've been through so much more. But I hate to have people cut themselves off from me by comparing my pain to their pain. I mean, it actually helps me to hear them and tell me what's going on with them. But at the same time, that switches from like this great compassion to this sort of total bitterness. You know, it flips back and forth.
And the compassion has to embrace the bitterness. The compassion has to say yes and that too, the bitterness. Because your child's legacy to you, your son's legacy to you, is all of this process you're going through that is training you to become an instrument of compassion in the universe. And that compassion has to embrace into it all of the perplexity and confusion and anger and everything about why is it all the way it is, which has to do with sickness, aging, and death. And this is all the stuff of life. And what you're being forced into being with the mystery of the universe. Other people can manifest more denial.
Yeah,
but your child's death forced it to be real for you. And this is the forced growth of a compassionate being. And it's hard to say, as I said in that letter, at some point you will appreciate that this is your child's legacy to you. And that to the extent that that compassion grows deeply in you, you become, in a way, the love that you and your child had together starts to be manifest in the way you are towards other people. And then you begin to feel the presence of that particular relationship infusing the way you hear other people in their suffering.
Yeah, that's happening.
It is happening. I can hear it in you.
Yeah.
And that's a great gift. It's a hard one, but it's a great gift.
Yeah, I really didn't want it.
I know you didn't
want it. You know, this is a funny thing. I thought I wanted it or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I thought I wanted all those, the character and, you know, the hero's journey and all that crap.
Yep.
But
you'd rather have your son back.
I'd rather have him.
I understand. And I really so deeply appreciate your sharing this, because I think you're touching such a deep human condition. And the fact that you and I can sit with it and look at it and feel it and not push it away and still grow with it, I think is useful to us and to all the people that are listening. So thank you.
Can I share one more thing
with
you?
You sure may. Go ahead.
I have a 10-year-old and a surviving son, and he's developmentally delayed. He's a very special kid too, but he said that his mother asked him once what Willem's mission was here. Willem is my son who died. And this is what he said. He said, Willem's mission was to show people how to spread happiness and joy around when disappointments made them think that what they want is better than love. Love is better than anything.
Wow. What did you say? He's disadvantaged? Is that what
he's
said?
He's developmentally delayed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he delayed?
Delayed, yeah.
I would say that he's an angel that's
dropped
by.
He's way ahead of me.
Oh, boy. Give
him
my love.
I thought he was channeling, I don't know who. Yeah. Who could he be channeling?
He's channeling himself.
He is.
You're just lucky you've got him around.
thank you very much.
Thank you, my
really
dear.
Really fun to talk
Thanks
to
a lot.
Okay, bye.
Siddiqui, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to get a chance to talk to you. Now, I called to talk about me.
Okay, go ahead.
I grew up here in South Central Los Angeles.
Yeah.
My mama raised me. She raised 9 kids, and I was one of those 9. And she had to raise them on her own, but my mama used to beat me, okay, with broomsticks and extension cords. She used to tie me down and beat me because I was a particular kid. I don't know what kind of insight I had or nothing, but she always knew I was going to be a problem. And so she used to beat me a little bit more than the rest of them. So as an adult, I'm almost 40. You know, I've had some kind of psychic damage or something, if you will, with regard to my relationship with women.
Mm-hmm.
I look at women, I always see my mama. My mm-hmm. mama. We have kind of different kind of bonding, and we are kind of growing in our bonding because I've tried to force her to see me man to woman rather than mother to son. And yes, I have been letting her see me as adult to adult. She sees me as an adult. She respects me as a man, mm-hmm. and I respect her as a woman. But I suffered in my life, and I tried to resolve the issues of my upbringing in my adult life, and I haven't been able to. And what I wanted to ask you was that can you give me some information on how I can deal with the damage where I have, where every time I see a woman in my life, every time I have a relationship with a woman, it always breaks up early. I'm not a homosexual. I don't deal with homosexuality. I respect anybody's right to do what they want to do, and anybody can do what they want to do as far as I'm concerned, but I like women. But I have not been able to love no woman ever in my life. The one woman that I did love, she fell in love with somebody else mm-hmm. and ran away. So
I hear this. I hear what you're saying, and the depth of the distrust and the what you call the damage that was done in your childhood may well color all of your life. You may or may not get out of that one. I think you've done incredibly well to keep redesigning the relationship with your mother so that it's as adult to adult and human to human and with respect for each other, because that respect goes a long way to putting the history to rest, in which you can understand how she got trapped in her frustrations and her anger and her insecurities and all of that. That's all wonderful, but when you come to the existential moment of each relationship you have with each woman that you're attracted to and that you feel is attracted to you, what you bring to that is as much truth and as much good heart as you can. And if she goes off with someone else, it hurts. You work with the hurt, you eat it when you're ready to eat it, and you get on with it. And you'll find that each relationship, if you'll come into it and bring to it the truth of the moment, don't try to be macho or don't try to be anything you don't feel you are. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a car going by.
Oh.
And if you just keep coming back into the moment of this relationship, instead of seeing this relationship only in historical perspective in relation to your mother and past relationships, see each one as an entirely fresh moment in which you are meeting a fellow human being. And to the extent that you can meet a woman first as a friend, first as a fellow human being, and then start to explore the man-woman dynamics, rather than coming into the relationship with each woman busy being a man, because that man-woman part of it is only part of the way human beings interact with one another. And maybe you're leading with that when you could allow that to fall back a little bit. And first of all, start to be friends with people, just like you're learning how to be with your mother. And you can do that with other people without the big plan that it's going to be romantic or it's going to end up that you're going to have a long-term relationship, and then let it follow from there. That's about the best I can do for you, Sadiq.
Well, yeah, I think you can do a little bit more because you really sound good right there in your analysis with it right there with me. Because I'm just trying to understand her. And it's almost like what I want to do is go off in the wilderness or sit up on some beach and grab a ton of books or something, or tapes, audio and video, and read and study.
If you were supposed to do that, you would, but you'll find that if that is being done out of an avoidance of something you find uncomfortable, it'll still haunt you and it'll still hang around. And you'll be busy being on an island thinking about your relationships that you're not having. So just listen to hear what the form of your dance is, and don't be afraid a little. You know, don't be afraid to risk. And when it blows up, just go through the pain and then get on with it. And you will find each relationship, you're coming at it from a different place. There is growth through all of these experiences you're having. You've grown a hell of a lot since you were the little boy being beaten. You're a different person now. And I really feel that you're moving along fine and just got to keep staying with the situation. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
At this moment, there are 10 people waiting on the line. And we will be back for some more in a few minutes. And what I've experienced in this past 2 hours is just a way in which our humanity is being shared. And I have so appreciated the kind of truth and sweetness and playfulness and the way in which we really are just hanging out in our living room together as fellow human beings exploring the delight and the play and the mystery. This is Ram Dass, Here and Now. Talk radio from the heart. You're listening to KPFK.
This podcast is brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and ramdass.org. We appreciate you listening, and we appreciate all the support that you've given us. Please continue that support and donate at ramdass.org. We can then continue to share what Ram Dass has been sharing for all of these years. Thank you.